Coming up on today's Next Fan Up, you're going to hear this. By the way,
I thought we were going to hear Adam and Eve on a raft or something. I paused there.
Okay, and you're probably not going to hear this.
I knew I was going to tongue-tie myself eventually during the show.
Because I cut it out of the show! Let's get it started right now!
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winning.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Super Fans.
They are who we thought they were.
Oh, it's Wild Card Weekend, ladies and gentlemen, and I am super, super fired up for this particular show. And of course, you've read the description, so you already know why. But before I bring in our very special guest, let me introduce you to the two super fans who are joining us for this special show. And that is James. He's our Texans super fan. Hi, James.
How's it going, Jay?
It's going quite well. And Nick is our Chiefs super fan. Hi, Nick.
I am fired up.
Nice. I love it. I love being fired up. I wish I could be fired up on the soundboard, but I don't have that drop. The guy who knows all about drops and being fired up is longtime friend and former co-host of the Football Today podcast at ESPN. He is Matt Williamson, better known as @WilliamsonNFL on Twitter. Hello, M-Dub. What's happening?
What's up, brother? Good to talk to you again. There's some familiar drops to open the show. I didn't know we were getting into that. Plus a little, maybe a little Tom Brady fired up, a little Obama fired up. I mean, there's a lot of fired up out there.
You know, I used to have all those drops, but apparently I hid them too well, so I don't have those. I do have this nice new one.
You like that? You like that?
So we can play that quite a bit. Yeah, that's pretty good. We've got a few others that
we've
I play
from
time to time.
We've got to be the dumbest team in America in terms of playing the game.
Yeah. There's all that sort of thing. And so we're going to get into the playoffs here in
playoffs?
Just a second. Yes, playoffs.
Oh, you're rolling. But there's
been a couple of quick news stories I wanted to hit with you, M-Dub, real super fast, because they're sort of important. And one of them happened just yesterday, Wednesday, and that is the firing of Lovie Smith at Tampa Bay. Came as a little bit of a surprise. Not many people expected this firing. What do you think happened in Tampa Bay?
Yeah, I don't have a great feel for this one either. This one kind of came out of left field, and I've never been the biggest Lovie Smith supporter, but I mean, he's an NFL head coach who knows how to wins games in this league, and those guys don't grow on trees. And, you know, if you look at the Bucs, I mean, they picked first overall last year. I mean, them, the Titans, the Jaguars, the Raiders. I mean, the arrow's going up on these teams mostly because they finally found their quarterback. And does Lovie Smith deserve a lot of credit for developing Jameis Winston? Probably some, but not all that much. I mean, he's never exactly have a great track record with quarterbacks to begin with. And one of the reasons I haven't been a huge Lovie Smith fan, too, is I think you need to do more than be a base cover two, Tampa two type defense. And, you know, he's a defensive-minded coach. That defense has some talent, but overall was rather disappointing. But this one still surprises me, just because I thought the organization overall is going in the right direction.
You know, the rumor is that Dirk Cutter is the leading candidate for the job. Dirk and Jameis Winston have a special relationship. And I'm not inferring anything. I just decided to use the phrase special relationship just to be funny. but that's sort of the rumor. And I guess if Dirk Cutter's available, I mean, I don't know if you necessarily go and you fire your head coach for Dirk Cutter, but that's one of the rumors right now. Well, how do you feel about that?
Well, that was my original thought too. And I meant to say that when you brought it up was this one, because it was a surprise, my hunch is ownership has somebody lined up, you know, and maybe by the time people are listening to this, that guy's been revealed. I assume Cutter's a very good possibility for that. I think bringing in an offensive minded head coach that's done good things with young quarterbacks would go a long way, you know, and you know, Winston and Lovie, they're just very different. I mean, one's a lot more conservative. One's a lot more outgoing today, you know, young, energetic. And that's not a knock on Lovie, but maybe a more of a quarterback whisperer would do the team some good.
You know, let's fire this to the super fans. James, along with the firing of Lovie Smith, we had Tom Coughlin step down. Both guys seem to have been embraced by their locker rooms quite a bit. You know, from a fan's perspective, and of course, I wish we had Dan here to talk about his Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You know, you recently had a new head coach. You know, what are you thinking right now with Lovie Smith gone in Tampa Bay?
Well, with Lovie Smith gone, looking at the reactions from the players on Twitter, it's exactly like you said. You know, he seemed to control that locker room, be kind of a player's coach, have them on board. And one of the players summed it up best. This is going to be their third system in 5 years. It's a little bit different than what the Texans did. You know, we had Gary Kubiak, and it just seemed like we were either always falling just short of the playoffs or making the playoffs and making an early exit. It seemed kind of like we were underachieving. Now, I guess you can argue that Lovie underachieved, having, you know, Vincent Jackson, Mike Evans, you know, Jameis Winston, and but he revitalized the career of Doug Martin down there. So to just have 2 years and say, okay, well, you know, you had your shot, now you're done, it doesn't seem like enough time to turn around an organization like Tampa that up until Lovie being there seemed to be in kind of a spiral.
Nick, you've got an offensive coordinator that's a hot commodity in terms of coaching interviews. And one of the rumored places could be back in Philadelphia. What are you thinking right now as the coaching carousel spins out of control?
Well, it would be, in my mind, really hilarious. Doug Peterson ends up signing on as the Philadelphia head coach 3 years after they fire Andy Reid. They bring back one of his lieutenants to implement Andy Reid's system. But, you know, it is interesting. I mean, I basically mirror a lot of what's been said about Lovie Smith. I feel like if they were going to fire him, they should have fired him a year ago when they had that really disappointing season. But, you know, obviously they're in rebuilding mode, and he's, you know, sort of developed the fundamentals of a rebuilding team that has a more or less bright future next year. I don't know. I really wonder about a lot of these coaches when they're in these meetings with owners and GMs being hired in these franchises where they just keep firing coaches right and left. You got to wonder if they're saying, like, well, look, I mean, if I sign here, are we going to actually sign somewhere where, like, these are what my expectations are, and if I meet them, you're not going to fire me? Because I see guys going out the door every single year. It makes for a really weird job market. It's obviously nothing like the one that we work in.
M-Dub, Lovie Smith, I'm sure he's going to find a home. Does he have a home available to him? Where does he fit in with the openings currently out there?
It's a good question. I hadn't thought of that angle yet either. And my thoughts on him that way would probably be, you know, I think he's one of those coaches that if you're a perennial loser, you know, as Jacksonville was, or, you know, the Browns, I mean, maybe the Browns come to mind, that I'm sure they want to make a bigger splash, but I think he could take a perennial loser to mediocrity. You know what I mean? I don't know that he's going to take him to the promised land, but he could change the culture in the building, which I think he did in Tampa Bay, of we're not the worst team in the league anymore. We're not the worst team in the division. We're not a laughingstock anymore, and get them to, you know, 7-9, you know, 8-8 in that neighborhood in a year or two. Cause like I said, I mean, there's not a ton of them on the planet that I say, this guy is a professional NFL head coach that's proven to win games. I mean, the Andy Reids and John Foxes of the world. I mean, guys that aren't going to the Hall of Fame necessarily, but are good coaches. I think Lovie's in that category. And these guys made the point, too, that with all these coaching changes, it really bothers me because, you know, making a change just to make a change isn't helpful. You know, I mean, for example, I was a scout with the Browns, with Butch Davis, and we ran a very strict 4-3. And, you know, Romeo comes in, and basically all the scouting we did that year goes out the window because he's running a much different 3-4. Like, to change just to change is a lot of wasted man hours for, boy, we brought in this 4-3 defensive end, and he doesn't help us anymore. I mean, it's just bad business.
For Lovie, two places that I've got in mind would be San Francisco, as a possibility, and would he accept a defensive coordinator position in New Orleans?
I don't know. I mean, someone that's been a head coach that long generally doesn't say, I'll just be a defense coordinator. I mean, maybe he'd take a take a year off, work for CBS or NBC or Fox or somebody like that, be an analyst, probably still making a good buck, definitely still making a good buck as a on a contract that's the Bucks are going to be paying him anyways. I doubt he would take a defensive coordinator job. San Francisco is not a bad fit, though. I mean, again, it'd be that same theory of perennial losers in the doghouse, at least get us to respectability.
By the way, I'm glad you mentioned your old team, the Browns. I joked that I was available for their GM positioning. You know, I can dominate in franchise mode on Madden. And then, of course, they went, you know, I would say like one step above what I was joking about and hired a guy from Major League Baseball to do some sort of crazy analytics. What do you think about that hiring in Cleveland? Paul D. Podesta.
I guess the jury's out. But, you know, if the Patriots would have done this, we'd all be like, boy, that's innovative. That's really smart. You know, if the Browns do it, it's like, oh, my God, what are they doing? You know, they're just going to screw things up again, which I'm sure they probably will. I don't like the idea of non-football people hiring your coach and GM, though.
Yeah, that's not a good spot to be in.
Bad recipe.
Moving on. One more coaching position. I mentioned Sean Payton. He says he's committed to coaching the New Orleans Saints. How comfortable do you feel Sean Payton will be the coach of the New Orleans Saints? I've been saying for the past 3 or 4 weeks, there is no coach and quarterback more connected to the community, I believe, than Sean Payton and Drew Brees in New Orleans. I can't imagine what would happen to that city if either of those two guys are not in New Orleans next season.
Yeah, I think that's 100% true with Brees especially. You know, and this all goes back to the Katrina situation and winning the Super Bowl and absolutely beloved in New Orleans and, you know, really the face of their sports community, rightfully so, going to the Hall of Fame. I'd never quite understood the whole why is Peyton even considering leaving situation. You know, I mean, he hasn't done wonderful things the past couple of years. You mentioned their defense is a total nightmare, and it has been for a little while. But this past off season was really interesting to me for the Saints, too, because they traded Jimmy Graham. They traded Stills. They accumulated a lot of picks. You know, I think that they're making a concerted effort, just going back to their offseason personnel moves, to get a lot younger, to rebuild, and to try to do it while you still have Drew. But the thing, the only sticking point here is Breeze's cap numbers is like $30 million. I mean, it's crazy, yeah. And it has to be reworked. And maybe more than any other team, the Saints, more, you know, they max out their credit cards. They do it over and over, and it got them a Super Bowl, but it's in turn has gotten them in debt too. And do you want to do that with a quarterback his age? I think you do. I think you don't let him leave. You try to restructure it, keep him around for 2 more years or so because he's still playing very well.
And one last item I have here, and this one might interest James and Nick. This time next week, we could be talking about teams moving to Los Angeles. I spoke to a podcaster yesterday who is living in St. Louis, and she has got her fans to start a Kickstarter to send Stan Kroenke a very special present. I'll wait until the news breaks on what that present is. But when the present arrives, I have a feeling there's going to be some press, and we will definitely have that podcaster here on Next Fan Up. What do you think, M-Dub? Are we going to have 1, 2, or 3 teams playing in L.A.?
Whew. This is usually the kind of things I avoid, as you know.
I know you do.
Stuff, the lawyer-based things. I can see 2. I mean, all 3 of those candidates to me make perfect sense to go. I think San Diego will not be back, and I don't think the Rams will be back.
James, what do you think? 1, 2, 3 teams in L.A.?
I think it'll be 2. The Rams have been very open about what they've sent the NFL, which is different than what San Diego and Oakland has. You know, they put out this nice economic study on how the city of St. Louis can't support 3 professional franchises, how they're so down in attendance. The report fails to mention that they haven't won 8 games since 2006. So that, you know, they're kind of saying, well, you guys don't come to the games no matter how bad of a product we put on the field. I don't even put it past Stan Kroenke to go full Al Davis and say, you know, I may not have the support of all the other owners, but I'm just going to do it and see what happens. He's already going forward to build this $2 billion mecca of a stadium out in Inglewood. And it's not a good situation in St. Louis. What would be very interesting is if they did move over there, how Jeff Fisher remains employed, or if they are going to go over into LA and have to compete with like the Chargers, do they go out and, you know, give the New Orleans Saints that second round pick that they're looking for Sean Payton just to try and make a big splash? Because, you know, in the NFC West, you're going to be contending with Seattle and Arizona for the next couple of years, San Francisco, if they get their act turned around. So if you go to LA and you don't put a winning product on the field, you're not going to be filling that stadium again.
Nick, what do you think?
Well, as a Chiefs fan, the one thing I wouldn't want to see is both the Raiders and the Chargers go into L.A., because that would probably force a restructuring of the division, and I wouldn't want to – I'd hate to lose those rivalries. But overall, I mean, I don't think – it seems like the Raiders' proposal hasn't been all that serious. It's largely been used as a negotiating chip with the city to try to get a better stadium for themselves, and they can maybe piggyback on it if just – either the Chargers or the Rams are given the nod by the NFL. Maybe they slide into being the second team in that stadium. But overall, I mean, it's just it's interesting. I mean, obviously, it's just the market's there. There probably should be a team or two in Los Angeles. But is this going to be ugly? I don't know if any other sports league in the world does it this way, where there's sort of this limited amount of franchises. There's no second tier. There's no relegation league or anything like that. And so, therefore, there's a lot of markets that aren't served. I also thought, I mean, watching the games and stuff over this last weekend, it's just so awkward. They have this constant commercial with Todd Gurley, like, playing around with kids with the St. Louis Arch in the background, and they're playing some, you know, pickup football, and in the end, sort of slogan, it's football is family. It's like, well, is football family if mommy and daddy then leave you for a more attractive kid in L.A.? I mean, it's just, for the NFL, they're going to break some hearts, and it's just another one of those big stories that sure is going to keep them in the headlines and be negative. At least some people are going to be unhappy with it. And I don't get the sense that there's a whole lot of LA people that are really jumping up and down for it.
All right. M-Dub, guys, I know you're chomping at the bit to talk some football, so let's get it started. We will start in chronological order, and oh, look, it's the Chiefs at the Texans. It's the battle of the super fans.
Hello, hello. You got Green Bay Brian here hosting the show here with James from the Texans and Nick from the Chiefs. How's it going, fellas?
Doing good.
Let's just jump right in. How do you see the Chiefs offense playing against the Texans defense, Nick?
Well, for the Chiefs, they can. I think their best ray of hope is just to hope that it goes the same way that it went in the Week One matchup. I mean, it's interesting that this season has taken the Chiefs, both the Chiefs and the Texans, full circle, and that they actually had somewhat similar season, at least the narratives of the seasons. They both started out pretty sluggish, was looking pretty dire, actually, about 6 or 7 games into the season, and then were able to turn it around with some long streaks of wins, and now they find themselves back in the same place, back in Houston in Week One of the playoffs. But in that particular game in Week One, the Chiefs, it was a big ray of hope for the Chiefs. The win went basically the way that the Chiefs always wanted to script their win. After all these offseason moves, Alex Smith had a great game. He threw for 3 touchdowns and 0 interceptions. The Chiefs ended up winning at 27-20, which was a bit of a misleading score because they really did dominate most of the game. And basically how it went was that it was really a huge game for Travis Kelce, and Jeremy Maclin showed his real impact on the field. I think it's actually their roles are going to flip a bit in this next particular game. Travis Kelce is definitely going to be a factor, but Jeremy Maclin has just turned into an incredible weapon for the Chiefs. I mean, he broke the team record for receptions this year, despite basically only playing 14 and a half games. He was out with an injury. And he only dropped one pass on 120 targets. So he is definitely the most reliable target that the Chiefs have. And Andy Reid's been able to find really good ways of getting him available in space. And I think, basically, if you look at the two teams overall, when I look at especially the offensive side of the ball, comparing the way that the Chiefs were playing right now as opposed to week one, it makes me even more optimistic, because going into week one, the offensive line was in total disarray. And in fact, they remained in total disarray for the first quarter to half of the season, with a lot of guys that were coming in hurt or playing out of position. There was all sorts of weird stuff going on. They weren't able to field a consistent group over several weeks. But now they've really kind of figured out pieces that work. A lot of the younger pieces have really stepped up. There's still going to be a few guys that are, stepping into somewhat new roles. I'm expecting, it looks like Zach Fulton, who's normally been our right guard, playing at center, but he's actually played at center the last couple of weeks, a bit at least, and he's been playing well. It's not a huge drop-off from our own center, but we got Jeff Allen back, probably playing at the left guard spot. And on the right tackle spot, it's going to be someone new. It's likely going to be Donald Stevenson over Ja Reed, but those guys are pretty much interchangeable. I mean, the most important thing is that the offensive line has been stable enough. It's been playing well enough. It's still probably, most certainly in the bottom half of the league. But the Chiefs have really learned how to use quick releases on passes and the running game to really mitigate some of their weaknesses. And that actually was pretty much on display in week one. I mean, obviously the biggest threat to the Chiefs offense throughout this entire game is going to be J.J. Watt. And to a lesser extent, Whitney Merciless coming off the other side. But in week one, Watt had, I think, a couple of sacks and several tackles for loss, but the Chiefs really didn't let that disrupt what they were doing most of the time. They were running the ball away from him. They were having Smith roll out on bootlegs away from him. He got his sacks, but most of the time they got the ball moving fast enough that he wasn't able to really make the big play. And I think they're going to continue to call up things like that are going to take advantage of some of the Texans' aggressiveness in their front seven. And give them some big plays. I mean, it was something that there's been a few plays this season so far where Andy Reid has really taken advantage of the fact that teams knew they're going to tear through that offensive line. And so he would more or less release them and throw to a quick slant for easy long touchdowns. I expect to see some interesting plays like that. And I'm confident going into this first playoff game.
All right, awesome. So let's hear from James a little bit. What do you think about the matchups from the Texans' perspective, looking at the Chiefs' offense?
Well, looking at the Chiefs' offense, I like how we stack up against them. I mean, Alex Smith, for his entire career and even under Andy Reid, has been known for these short passes and getting the ball out quickly. That came back to get us, or they were able to generate quite a bit of offense in week one. But our defense has evolved greatly over the last nine games. Kansas City has gone, 10 straight wins. What most people don't realize is that over the last nine games, Houston is 7-2. As far as other AFC playoff teams, that's, they're only behind Kansas City for the last nine games. The first half of the season, we only forced six turnovers and we gave the ball away nine times. Over the second half of the season, we were able to force 19 turnovers. I'm not very optimistic that we can force Alex Smith into a lot of mistakes, especially on those short throws. But if we can, tackle, which again was a big problem, we were very near the top of the league and missed tackles in the first half of the season. We just limit them to smaller gains. I don't see a repeat of the week one matchup with the Chiefs where they're just able to drive down the field at will, which is very strange to say for a Kansas City offense. As far as the Houston offense, it's basically let's chuck it deep to DeAndre Hopkins a couple times a game, which I'm all for that game plan. He has proven to be a all-pro wide receiver at this point. And Nate Washington and Cecil Shorts have done just enough to make it so that they can't just double team with support DeAndre Hopkins on every single play. Unfortunately, we lost our left tackle, Dwayne Brown, last week. So what little semblance of the run game that we had gotten going, and we actually had gained a little bit of momentum in the run game leading into the last two, three games of the season, that's probably going to suffer a little bit. I also didn't like seeing our center hobbling around a little bit at the end of last game. So that's not going to bode well, especially with Justin Houston slated to return this week. And I saw that Tamba Hali had missed some time. Nick, is Tamba Hali supposed to be playing this week?
He will be playing. Yeah, he had an operation on his hand, but he's playing about half of the snaps in the last game.
Okay. So, you know, what little hope there was for keeping Brian Hoyer upright is quickly diminishing. But, you know, Brian Hoyer has somewhat evolved as a quarterback, or as much as a Brian Hoyer can evolve as a quarterback. I think getting rid of Ryan Mallett helped just stabilize the quarterback position. We had five different people listed as quarterbacks take snaps for us during this season. We had two out of position players, Jonathan Grimes and Cecil Shorts, take snaps for us at quarterback. So we have a true quarterback carousel in the backfield there. But I think that our offensive line, as patchwork as it is going to give Brian Hoyer just enough time to get the ball out either on a screen or a dump off to Alfred Blue or over to DeAndre Hopkins.
All right, let's hear from Nick. How do you like your matchups looking at the Texans offense versus the Chiefs defense?
Well, there's not many offenses that are in the AFC playoff race that I would rather face than the Texans. I mean, no offense to James, but it's one that we've seen before to some extent. And actually, I mean, I think there's a lot of similarities between these teams, but especially with the loss of their left tackle and Justin Houston coming back, I mean, there's just a lot of matchups to like around there. You know, I think for Houston, the key for them is going to be getting the run game going, but I just don't expect they're going to be able to against the Chiefs defense. I mean, with a lot of really pressure-based defenses, they tend to be a little bit too aggressive and let runners sneak through and get big gains on occasion. But that just doesn't really happen with the Chiefs because middle linebacker Derek Johnson is just a really solid veteran in the middle who can usually see those things coming. And basically no one has been able to run on the Chiefs particularly well, especially during this winning streak towards the end. On the edges and downfield, obviously DeAndre Hopkins is the Texans' biggest weapon, and it will be really interesting to see who they decide to put on him in terms of coverage. I think they're going to mix in a bunch of different looks. It's something that our defensive coordinator, Bob Sutton, says a lot, is that they try to stay away from always and never. And so, I mean, if it were me, I think it would make the most sense to put Sean Smith on him because Sean Smith is a big, tall, very physical corner. And I think if you can really be physical with Hopkins and the push man game in the first 5 yards, really push him a lot and then get him off his rhythm and keep him from breaking away, and you have Eric Berry helping over the top, then I think it'll be really difficult for Hopkins to make a huge impact on the game. They're not going to be able to neutralize him. He's going to get hit, but I think the Chiefs can slow him down enough that that'll be okay. And the thing is with Peters on the other side is he probably is a bit faster and would probably be more likely to be able to run step for step with Hopkins, but he also he tends to let a few get by him early in games before he picks up on the tendencies and is able to jump in front of some passes opportunistically and pick them up later in games. And so in such a tight game, I would feel more comfortable putting him on Smith, but that's going to be a really interesting matchup to watch. As far as, you know, the other wide receivers, as James said, I mean, I there's no one else really in their wide receiving core that scares me. And in terms of short dump-offs, it's something that the Chiefs have actually been very good at sniffing out and shutting down at all of the behind-the-scrimmage passing game. So I feel like that's a really strong matchup in the Chiefs' favor.
All right. Well, then let's close with some X-factors and score predictions. We'll start with you, Nick.
Well, I think one of the interesting X factors that I think is only really getting fully noticed is Alex Smith's ability to break out runs with his legs. I mean, as I was talking about ways that you can beat this sort of aggressive front seven, is that Smith has been very good at, if he doesn't see something he likes, he's actually a really great runner. He had a career high 498 rushing yards this year. He ran for 30 first downs, which is like two per game, obviously. And it seems like it was even more weighted towards the end of the season where he figured out a way to utilize that as a weapon more. And the biggest, though, X factor is going to be Alex Smith's and Andy Reid's brains. They Andy Reid has been, he'll show some dazzle, some really creative stuff in the first half of games. And lately he's been really conservative and going vanilla. And it's pretty clear. And he admitted as much this week in front of the press that he was saving a lot of stuff for the playoffs. Some of the interesting things they did against Oakland was just running the read option directly at Khalil Mack, who's a brilliant player, but a young player, and forcing Khalil Mack just to freeze and figure out what to do when he sees Alex Smith in front of him, and letting Alex Smith decide to pitch it or run it. It's an interesting idea. I'm not sure if that's going to work against a veteran like J.J. Watt, and I'm not sure you really want to risk J.J. Watt getting a free shot on your quarterback, but I still think that Andy Reid's going to come up with some interesting things like that that is going to be the opposite of what the Texans expect the Chiefs to roll out with. And I expect that the Chiefs, I think the score is going to be somewhat similar to the first matchup. I think it's going to be a sneakily high-scoring game, and I think the Chiefs pull away with about a touchdown margin. So I'm going to say something like, let's say 27-17.
One of the things that I've noticed looking at the Kansas City numbers is that they're just incredibly efficient on drives. They don't give the ball away. And on top of that, they've got a pretty good special teams, like them in good field position whenever they start their drives. They lead the league in where they start their drives, line of scrimmage at the start of the drive, typically starting about their 31-yard line. Texans are 32nd in special teams, but they've been showing some signs of improvement. I know on the Slack group, we like to say how important special teams are. But just for Houston to stay in this game, they're going to have to win this battle of attrition and stop this efficient offense that is averaging, you know, about a half point per drive, and 2 points per drive. And slow them down to the point where they're going to have to get some punts and then just slowly back them up, because our offense is not going to be putting together 80-yard drives time after time. And then Nick brought up another X factor, and that is Andy Reid. It's been a long time since he's done an Andy Reid thing with his timeouts or his clock management or his challenges. And with the spotlight on, I could see Andy Reid calling some very strange timeouts, just, you know, mismanage the end of a half and maybe cost himself a couple of points. So after all of that, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the Texans are actually going to pull out what would be an upset and win 20-17.
These teams are so similar. I think probably the whatever team gets the first two score lead probably wins. I don't know about how the Texans have been running so far this year, but basically the Chiefs are at their most vulnerable whenever they have to really fight from behind. As long as they get the lead, they can run out the clock. They're comfortable. They know their defense is going to stop everybody for the most part. But they're really uncomfortable when they have like a 14-point deficit and they have to start really doing un-Chiefs-like things to pull back into the lead. And that's when they start making bigger mistakes and taking bigger risks. And so that's the sort of the Chiefs' death spiral. So if you guys get up by 14 points, I think you'll probably take it.
Yeah, we definitely don't do a good job of playing from behind. You know, it's all about the turnovers, and you guys were second in the league in turnover rate as far as or giving the ball away, I should say. So, yeah, if we fall behind two scores, it's going to be a very long day for me.
And there you have it. You'll all get to find out the final score on Saturday.
All right, M-Dub. So there were the thoughts of James and Nick. Let's get your thoughts in this game. We've got the hottest team in terms of winning in the Kansas City Chiefs. They've got that 10-game winning streak against the Texans, who actually have been pretty hot here down the stretch as well. What do you see happening in this one?
Yeah, I'm really excited for this one. I mean, I think there's a lot of similarities between these teams in that, like you say, and they're both playing their best right now when it matters most. I don't think the average fan realizes how good these two defenses are either, you know, because the Chiefs started very slow for that first month. I mean, they had Marcus Peters was a rookie and learning. Steve Smith was suspended. Eric Berry was recovering from a major disease. Don Terry Poe wasn't 100% healthy. Derek Johnson was coming back from injury. So it took them a month or so to hit their stride. But I think the Chiefs and the Texans are right there with Denver or Carolina as the absolute best defenses in the league. And, you know, in Houston, we've seen a lot of change schematically, really. You know, they've moved Watt around. Merciless has stepped up. They have three young corners that are playing a lot better. They benched Raheem Moore, who was a real liability at safety, and they've got better play up the middle because of it. And, you know, neither one of these offenses is super scary. And I think both these head coaches are very good offensive-minded coaches. They don't ask a lot of their quarterback. They have a real good feel for what their quarterback is. But in the end, I just don't know where the points come from. I mean, I picked this game to be 10-9 in Kansas City's favor, and I think it's going to be extremely low scoring, very hard to get first downs. I don't see either running game taking over. You know, Hopkins is a great player, but he's going to do battle against good corners, and there's no one else really to beat you in that offense. And the same's kind of true with Macklin. Kelsey had a good game in the first time they met, and but like I said, they're better at safety and up the middle than they were in week one. And I also don't take any stock really in that week one game. It's just so long ago, and both these defenses are light years better now.
I will say, you know, you mentioned Alex Smith. I saw a useless stat that said that Smith right now has the longest active streak in the postseason for passes completed without an interception. That is in the postseason. He only needs, I think, two or three more to pass Jeff Hostetler. You know, I know you're not the hugest Alex Smith fan. I know you're not the hugest Kansas City fan. You're a Kansas City hater, as a matter of fact. I'm just going to throw that out there just to stir the pot. But and I've loved the Texans for a while. My son's flag football team, we're the Little Texans this year. We struggled. Funny how we struggled and the Texans struggled. As soon as our season was over, the Texans season took off. So maybe it was the Little Texans holding the Big Texans down. But at the end of the day, I really like the Chiefs in this game. And just to confirm it, Number Fire, which I've been using all season long, M-Dub, Number Fire has a 60.3% likelihood of Houston +3. When Number Fire loves a number that much, you go the opposite direction. And so I like the Chiefs here. And since it is 3, the Chiefs are officially my upset special. By the way,
I thought we were going to hear Adam and Eve on a raft or something. I paused there.
I don't have Adam and Eve on a raft. I wish I did. I could easily get Adam and Eve.
I was sitting there waiting. I was like, oh, I haven't heard it in a week or two. And I can't believe, Pod, you passed on the opportunity to take Houston at Yom.
Well, you know, it was definitely a layup there for me to do. But I should mention in Pigskin Pick'em, Greg, our Steelers super fan, whom we're going to hear from in just a moment, won the Pigskin Pick'em group. He beat out Sitko here in the last 3 weeks. Of course, Cowboys Brian did finish up in third, and there were three of us, Monty for the Raiders, Nick, our Chiefs super fan, and myself, who all tied fourth place. But really, my picks sucked going down the stretch, including 5 straight misses on my lock of the week. That's just not good. Yeah, that's not what we're looking for there. Yeah,
we're not a very good football team right now, obviously.
So speaking of Greg, our Steelers super fan, he's going head to head with English Simon. Here we go. It's Battle of the Super Fans AFC game number 2.
Here we are is the Superfan battle with the Steelers and Bengals. I got English Simon on the line with me. How you doing, Simon?
Yeah, very good. The weather over in England isn't particularly great at the moment, but still looking forward to the game on Saturday night.
Excellent. I am too. I'm Greg. I'm the Steelers superfan. And let's just get into it. Simon, how do you see this game going for your offense?
Offensively, it's going to be interesting to see if the running game can continue kind of, I don't want to say resurgence, but it's been better the last couple of weeks and to get some runs against that, what I think is a good Baltimore front. And then a week before, we did some good things in against Denver on Monday Night Football. So if we can continue to kind of control the game that way and AJ McCarron can make some throws to kind of keep the chains moving, then we've got a chance to kind of do that. And I think one of the things that we need to focus on is is not turning the ball over, and then from there try and see if our defense can make enough pressure to kind of tilt the game our way. But I think offensively it's about not putting ourselves in difficult situations, not turning the ball over and making a few big plays here and there against which I imagine is still quite a leaky Steelers secondary.
Yeah, I think that's a good strategy for the Bengals. I've been interested because the first two games, the Bengals offense seemed not to be as high powered as I thought it would be against the poor Steeler defense. And if they were able to do what you just said, I think they'll have a much better success this time.
I think you're right. I think it's everyone came to that game thinking the first game would be, you know, 35-31 type game or whatever, and it ended up being quite a low scoring game. But the AFC North game is always quite a lot tighter than people think, given the familiarity that both teams have with each other. And also, you know, it's tough to go to Heinz Field against the underrated front, really. Front seven's been really good for you guys, and we've not really handled that well in previous years. And obviously, we made a few plays at the end, but I think it speaks more volumes of a cautious kind of Bengals approach more than us trying to kind of force it into a game that would suit you guys more than it suits us, I think.
Yeah, Hugh Jackson, he's a pretty smart guy. He really does a great thing with his unbalanced lines and using all your weapons. I've been very impressed with him.
Yeah, and I think we've held a few things back, I think, recently. So I think we've been quiet as there's been a few wildcat looks here and there, obviously with Mo Sanu, you know, given the fact that we've got AJ McCarron, we're trying to kind of make you kind of guess about what could come. But I think there's a lot more in sort of Hugh's cupboard of tricks, so to speak, that we can kind of potentially maybe unlock some things there on Saturday night, Sunday morning for me. But I think it'd be interesting to see kind of what our approach is and if we kind of really come at you maybe with more of a spread look. You just don't know, really. I think that'll be an interesting part about how we can maybe adapt our game plan normally to kind of maybe take advantage of your weaknesses.
Yeah, I can see them doing a number of things. That's what the headache is for us. Switching to the Steelers offense against the Bengals defense, I'm a little worried because we lost D'Angelo Williams, and you guys are dealing with Andy Dalton being out. But I'm a little bit less worried about Williams for this particular game because I just realized that Heath Miller has had 10 catches in each one of the first two matchups, and he's basically taking the place of the running game for the Steelers against the Bengals. And both matchups, they haven't been able to run. Do you see the Bengals defense doing anything to stop the slow and old Heath Miller from getting his 10 catches?
Good question. I think the reason we struggle, I think fundamentally tight end do well against our 4-3 defense because the fact that we don't have very athletic linebackers for starters. Emmanuel Lamour is now an IR, so that's another kind of, he's our coverage linebacker, so to speak. So that's another issue for us. I think it's weird because we've done well against Jimmy Graham and those sort of people. But to your point, if we kind of, you know, he's done well on sort of short passes, getting a yard after catches, the screens, those sort of things, that can kind of beat that four-man front where you rush those four guys, linebackers are trying to stop the run, not necessarily kind of stop the pass and kind of open those things up. And it's also a kind of a reliability or a security blanket, so to speak, for Ben's kind of thing. It's those deeper balls that are kind of cut off by our, you know, a decent secondary, obviously underneath is where those kind of gains can be had. So I think if George Aloka played, that would be good for us because he's done well in coverage. Reggie Nelson, as you know, Greg, has been a bit of a Steelers foil. He's had, I think it's 6 or 7 picks in the last 4 seasons, I think. You know, so if we can kind of make some plays there and limit them in front of us, then I think Heath Miller's dominant, so to speak, although 10 catches, that's not going to hurt us too massively if we can keep you guys out of the red zone and the end zone. So for me, Heath's not the big threat in your offense. It's limiting Antonio Brown, Martavis Bryant, Marcus Wheaton, those guys, as opposed to maybe worrying about Heath necessarily.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think that's the reason Heath has gotten those good games, because of the other guys. My other thing I'd like to ask you about is Ben has looked very skittish these last few games on the road against a good pass rush. Do you think, is it still King Dunlap or Carlos Dunlap? And then,
Carlos Dunlap, yeah.
And Michael Johnson, are they going to be able to get pressure on Ben?
It depends, because you've used a lot of heavy sets against our sort of four-man front, and I think that might open things up for potentially some blitzes on the linebackers, potentially. I think we need to affect Ben. I think everybody knows that's the kind of key to the game, that we can't let him get on his game and get on point. Listen, you're going to have 7, 8, 9 catches to Antonio Brown at the minimum. It's just making sure that there's no point in big play. So I think if we can find ways to kind of keep you in kind of, you know, second and third and longs and try and limit, make you kind of force Ben to pass and to condense that pocket with Geno Atkins in particular, I think is the key to this game, then we've got a chance. But I think from terms of the four-man front, it depends the way in which you approach it. Do you want to have those heavy lines and try and establish a run or the tight end in your offense, or do you want to spread it out and kind of throw it around? And I think you probably, and you can speak better than me, but you'll try and make the game a little bit more physical than you will kind of spread out, throw it around, which I think you've done in previous away games this season, where you've kind of had some issues where Ben's made some sort of crucial turnovers at times that have been punished in some games and haven't been punished in others. And this is a type of game that if you can, you know, we can get those turnovers, 2 or 3 turnovers, then we'll win those games, because your record in those situations when your turnovers are up hasn't been great. And that's kind of, I'm pretty sure what the team will be preaching this week is affect Ben and getting to turn the ball over, because that's when, as you saw in the first game, you know, those 2 or 3 turnovers that you had, they turn the game in the end of it in a close game with AJ McCarron at quarterback. That's what the game will come down to, and I have no doubt that those fourth quarter plays will matter more this game than any other Bengals Steelers game in recent history, and there have been quite a few of those, to say the least.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree with you. Switching gears a little bit, I'd like to spend a few minutes talking about Andy Dalton, and I guess I have a little bit of a rift here. If the Bengals win this game, I hope Dalton's the quarterback. And if they lose the game, I hope that it's AJ McCarron. And I'm confident in the Steelers' ability to win the game regardless of who plays quarterback. But just from the interesting viewpoint that you do not live in Cincinnati, but you're the Cincinnati Bengals fan, and the fan base there seems to be so hard on Dalton. If they do get a playoff win finally, I hope that he's the quarterback for it, because I don't like what the Cincinnati fans have been getting on him about the playoff failures.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because if you watch the press conference from Tuesday, I think it was, of AJ McCarron, he couldn't understand why the fans are kind of negative towards the fact that we've got to now 5 playoffs in a row, which is a phenomenal effort to get there is huge. I think the reasons why we've lost, Dalton's been not played great, but the reasons why we've lost those games is because we can't stop the run. We've been terrible in the second half. I think the stat is we've been the point differential in those 4 games that we've lost is something like 57-6 in the favour of the offense. But from my perspective, you know, we have to. I'd like Dalton to win a game in the playoffs, and it'd be typical Bengals if AJ McCarron won this game against Pittsburgh Steelers, and we go to Foxborough next week, Dalton's back, and we lose the game. But I think you have to look at the team, and at playoff time, it's the best of the best. So you're going to come against great teams on both sides of the ball, and you have to, both sides of the ball have to deliver, and both sides haven't, and the coaches haven't delivered. So, yeah, I would love Dalton to win the game, to be back healthy, and to have a 300-yard passing game, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, that kind of, you know, real statement victory. But it looks like AJ's going to be the quarterback this week. Let's hope we win. You know, we've got a chance. It's a small one, I think, but we've got a chance, and hopefully Dalton can come back and deliver the next couple of wins, and we can win the Vince Lombardi Trophy. But let's take it one game at a time, and fingers crossed that we can make a few more plays than you guys do. But I think, interestingly to you, I think the question is, you've not won a playoff game for a few years now, and to be honest, you kind of got lucky to get in there in the end after a terrible loss in Baltimore. What's the talk been like in Pittsburgh about Mike Tomlin and Big Ben in those kind of big playoff games? Because the record is such that you have lost some games recently, the big games. Kind of, what's the view there from the fan base?
I think the overall view is that ho-hum, we're in the playoffs again, but is it going to be a different result than last year? Because it's eerily similar to last year's playoffs, where we lost our starting running back again the week before the playoffs. And D'Angelo's in a walking boot right now. We don't know if he's going to play or not. We won't know until game time, probably. Tomlin, he's Tomlin. He's won a Super Bowl. He's been in 2 Super Bowls. They're not going to fire him or anything. So everyone's just deals with it. Tomlin, they like his press conferences. And Ben, people are worried he's getting old. And the most interesting thing with the spell of not winning a playoff game since 10 is since Chuck Knoll was hired, the Steelers have not gone a 5-year period without winning a playoff game. And this year, if they don't win a playoff game, would be the 5th year. So they'd break that streak for the last 40-some years. So I'm hoping that I don't see that happen this time, but just a little footnote for history there.
Yeah, I think we're 23 years without a playoff win. Obviously, 0-6 for Marvin Lewis. It's a lot of things on the line here. It's great that it's Bengals Steelers again. It's become the primary rivalry now in the AFC North. So I'm looking forward to albeit a late night, but one that hopefully, you know, it comes ends in victory, and hopefully it's a great game of football that both teams can be proud of their effort at the end of the day.
Absolutely. All right, Simon, I got about 90 seconds here left on the clock. What do you think about the score? Give me your score prediction.
I'm going to go 24-21, last minute field goal, and I'm going to say Bengals. Give me the Bengals.
Okay. I'm going to go very similar. I'm going to 28-20 Steelers. So it should be a fun game, and I think whatever team wins this game is going to make some noise and get to the AFC title game at a minimum. I feel very good about our division again.
Indeed. Go to the AFC North.
By the way, you heard a little bit of clicking and popping there. English Simon is, in fact, calling us from England. And so technology and phones work great when they work. But, you know, you get what you can when it's across the pond. So both guys there looking at a close game, both picking their teams, obviously. M-Dub, you are a Steelers homer. I'm assuming you're going with the Steelers here, too.
I am, but I don't feel super confident about it. You know, I mean, I think the Steeler defense and their secondary has some major, you know, mismatches against them, against, you know, Eifert, who's healthy for this one, A.J. Green, of course, really good weapons. But their defense also does a really good job of getting after the quarterback, and they create turnovers. And I think McCarron has played okay, but I didn't think he looked great in week 17. And I think he's going to be in for a long day mentally, trying to decipher these blitz packages. And I think Ben just has a massive checkmark in his favor at the quarterback position. But the thing that gives me the most pause is D'Angelo Williams, you know, because if you look at what Cincinnati does, it really doesn't matter who their opponent is, but they basically play a two-high safety shell against anybody, and they trust their front seven to stop the run. Well, you know, they're going to eliminate big plays, and they're great at eliminating big plays, but if you can't run them out of that, if you can't beat them with a great running game, you sort of play into their hands. And in that way, I'm not a big fan of this matchup for, you know, Steelers creating big plays or eating a lot of clock with the run game. So I'm taking Pittsburgh basically based on the quarterback position, but it's going to be a close game.
James, what do you think?
Well, Mike Tomlin has a great record against Cincinnati. He's 13-5 against them for his career. The Steelers playing in Cincinnati are 13-2 in their last 15 matchups, going back to your useless stats pod. But I think M-Dub just hit everything right on the head. Cincinnati is just amazing at taking away the big plays. Antonio Brown, the big, you know, receiver for Ben, he caught 21 passes, but in the first game against them, he caught 11 for 47. In the second game, he caught 10 for 87. So they're letting Antonio Brown get his catches, but then they're immediately tackling him, not letting him get deep. Martavis Bryant should be interesting. I know Ben had some strong words for him, how he had to toughen up for the playoffs, but I don't see him being as big of a factor because, again, Cincinnati's very good at taking away
playoffs
plays. But at the end of the day, I think having to rely on A.J. McCarron, even with Cincinnati getting their running game going, getting Jeremy Hill back up to near form the past couple weeks, just not going to be enough. And there are going to be more questions around if Marvin Lewis should stay. And even though Andy Dalton won't be playing in this game, there might be some questions around Andy Dalton because it'll be another early playoff exit for the combo of Lewis and Dalton.
Nick, what do you think?
Yeah, a lot of it's already been said, and I also have that tendency where I just want to believe that I think Roethlisberger is going to make the one play that makes the difference in the game. But then the more I look at it, the more I look unit by unit, matchup by matchup, I think the sum total of the matchups, Bengals are a better team right now and are playing much better. And also, I mean, A.J. McCarron's going to be getting a start, which is it appears that way right now, and that gives you obvious pause because it's his first playoff game, but it is a first full NFL start against the Broncos. He actually played really well. The Broncos are a much better defense than the Steelers. And, you know, it was a bit of a lackluster game last week where they didn't ask him to do much, but I think he's going to play well enough, and I get the feeling that the Bengals, they really want to break this playoff losing streak. they're playing at home. I think it means a lot to them. And I just think that the Steelers, which have been very up and down lately, they're just going to fall a little bit short and the Bengals run away with it.
M-Dub, let's revisit this A.J. McCarron, Andy Dalton situation. It does appear A.J. McCarron would be the starter, but how short of a leash is that leash? I mean, how soon will we see Andy Dalton come off the bench like Peyton Manning did last week?
Well, if he can play, he's going to start, don't you think?
I don't know. Do you think they're playing coy with Andy Dalton and A.J. McCarron right now?
No. I think that apparently Dalton's practicing, right, finally, or to some degree. But I don't think he's – I mean, if he can play, he's going to be the starter, in my opinion. I mean, clearly he's their guy.
All right.
I don't see him coming off the bench and a la Peyton Manning.
Okay. Well, then that's going to be something to see. And obviously I made the joke before. I'll keep making it because that's what I do. Take a little air out of the ball. Andy Dalton's grip will be just fine. All right. Sunday games. We have the Seattle Seahawks and the Minnesota Vikings. I recorded this with Sam, our Giants super fan. So as you all know, we've been telling you that we don't have a Seattle Seahawks super fan. And if you want to be that Seahawks super fan, if they happen to go further in the playoffs, just send us an application, nextfanup@gmail.com. We'll get the application. We'll look it over. And most likely the first one of you that sends us an email, you're going to get the gig. So in the meantime, we're going to have Sam, who's our Giants super fan, sit in to represent the Seattle Seahawks. Hi, Sam.
Hey, how's it going?
Now, I don't necessarily know why a Giants superfan would represent the Seahawks, but you volunteered for the gig. So what is your connection to the Seahawks?
I don't know. I have this weird connection from the Giants playing the Seahawks like 4 years ago and almost winning while committing 13 false start penalties. And ever since then, I just have a certain affinity for the Seahawks.
And Davey, our Vikings superfan, is MIA, despite telling us that he was available at this particular time. So I don't know what's going on with our Vikings superfan, but I can tell you if you send us an email at nextfanup@gmail.com, there's a very good chance that we're going to take your Vikings application as well. But let's get down to the nitty gritty of this game. Everyone knows my position on the Vikings. I've never believed in them all season long. And honestly, I feel like they're going up against the one team they don't want to see, and that's the Seattle Seahawks, as Seattle crushed them in early December. It was a huge blowout. Sam, what are your thoughts on this game?
I actually disagree. I think what the Rams did 2 weeks ago to the Vikings, just destroying them with that pass rush and running the ball with Gurley, I think the Vikings have a decent chance of reproducing because their line is great. I mean, they destroyed the Giants a couple of weeks ago, and Adrian Peterson is still the best running back in football. So if they can keep the ball on the ground and really control the game and get after Wilson, I think they have a real chance of winning. That being said, that Seattle defense is really good. And if they take away Peterson, then you have Teddy Two Gloves Bridgewater trying to beat you. And I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, and I think that's where the key of the game stands for the Seattle defense against the Vikings offense. They've got to find a way to eliminate Adrian Peterson, and that leaves the Legion of Boom versus Teddy Bridgewater. It's Teddy's first run in the playoffs. He's not a rookie quarterback, but he's still rather young. I like the experience of Seattle a lot more than what the Vikings have going for them in this game.
Yeah, and they're getting Lynch back, which that's big because he doesn't necessarily need blockers. He can make enough people miss. His cutbacks are vicious, and even that gives Russell Wilson just one more weapon. He's been doing it without Thomas Rawls the past 2 weeks, so I don't know. I can't imagine him playing any better, but this will certainly help.
This is certainly turning into a one-sided battle here. And when we're talking about the Seattle offense versus the Vikings defense, Russell Wilson is the hottest quarterback in the NFL, I think, going into the playoffs. Maybe Kirk Cousins. It's a, I don't know, that might be a coin toss, but Russell Wilson has the experience here, and he's going to need to be hot because it's going to be cold, Sam. They're already saying this could be the coldest game in NFL history.
Yeah, that worries me because they do love that deep ball to Lockett and Baldwin when plays break down, and that cold air can just kill that ball, and may not be able to see them do that effectively this game. I think that helps the Vikings, the weather, because they want to be running the ball. They don't want the ball in the air. They want to keep ground and pound. So at least that's working for them. And, you know, that's what home field advantage is for. It's you take advantages of things like that.
Well, and of course, you could always take a little bit of air out of the ball. I hear that helps, apparently.
No, nobody would ever do that.
No, I don't know why anyone would even consider doing something like that. My prediction for this game is I don't necessarily see a replay of exactly what happened back in December, but I don't like the Vikings' chances here. I think they're even a season too soon, and I would say even the people that believed in the Vikings would say they're a season too soon. I like what they've got. They're clearly building something special there. We'll see what they can do next year. But in terms of this year, I like the Seahawks and I like them by a lot. As a matter of fact, if I have to, and I do have to put a curse on a team, going to be the Seattle Seahawks. I'm locking them in.
They are who we thought they were. And we let them off the hook.
Oh, we didn't leave them off the hook. We locked them in and we cursed them. So, that's one thing you got going for you, Minnesota. Sam, what do you think about this game?
Yeah, I think this is going to be ugly for the Vikings. I think the Seahawks roll through. If I had to give a score, 31-7, something of that range. I don't think it's going to necessarily be close. I think that Vikings offense is a little one two-dimensional and that defense isn't good enough yet.
All right, let's throw it back to me with M-Dub and our other super fans. All right, M-Dub, as our listeners just heard, I'm still not a believer in the Vikings. I think they're a year too early, and I think they got the short end of the picks here by having the Seahawks revisit them again this season.
Yeah, I think this is actually a blowout. Seattle's really, really good right now on both sides of the ball. The defense doesn't get the credit it has the last couple of years, but it's still fierce. The secondary is very good. They're very good coming off the edge with those defensive ends, Bennett, Averill. Minnesota doesn't protect well. I'm not a huge Teddy Bridgewater fan. I mean, I think he's on the pace to be a Hoyer, Dalton, Alex Smith type caretaker sort of guy. And you know, in a game like this against such a good offense and as well as Wilson's playing, I have a hard time coming up with any matchups that really favor the Vikings at all. One saving grace maybe is the weather. You know, I mean, if the weather is as nasty and brutal as they're saying it is, maybe there's a punt people can't throw as well. The kicking game's a little erratic because of that. Maybe there's two or three fumbles that wouldn't have happened. Maybe that's an equalizer, but I just think Seattle's much better than the Vikings. And I'm not a Vikings hater. I mean, I like the Vikings.
Yeah, well, the other saving grace for Minnesota is I locked in the Seahawks in a blowout as well. So the Vikings do have a chance in terms of that. Nick, what do you see in this game here between the Seahawks and the Vikings?
I'd also really like to see Teddy Bridgewater develop into something as a quarterback. I mean, he definitely has some skills, and they've been able to make things work with him this year, largely due to their strong running game and their strong defense. But when they can't run the ball, his limitations are really exposed, and I don't see them being able to really have a dominant game, even with, you know, all day and Peterson in the playoffs. Against this Seattle defense, I just don't see it happening, and I just don't see them getting it done. I also think Seattle wins big.
James?
I think Seattle's going to win. I don't think it'll be quite the 38-7 blowout that they had earlier in the season. Minnesota had to play Seahawks and Cardinals in back-to-back weeks, and their defense has gotten a little bit healthier since then. But their offense is just too one-dimensional. It's just, you know, run Adrian Peterson into the line, and the Seahawks have proven this year that they can stop a number one running back, or at least limit a number one running back. It looks like they're going to be getting Marshawn Lynch back for the game, which, you know, anytime you're viewing getting Marshawn Lynch back as just kind of a, oh, that's nice because our offense is already doing so well. You know, the advantage is going to be to the Seahawks there.
M-Dub, let's touch on that Marshawn Lynch. How effective do you think he'll be, especially since this will be his first game back? And with that cold, I'm sure it's going to affect whatever injury he's recovering from.
Yeah, I don't expect him to come in and just be the workhorse and be, you know, the 25 carry type of guy like he usually is, because Michael's pretty good. You know, Christine Michael has flashed very nicely since returning to Seattle. They obviously liked him enough to use a second-round pick on him back in the day. There's a major knucklehead factor with him, but, you know, I think that they've got him, you know, to the point that they trust him and that he can move the chains. And then I think you start to sprinkle Lynch in maybe in a 50-50 type of role, and then next week whenever they go to Arizona or whatever, you give it to Marshawn to take over. A big key there, though, is what's going on with Linval Joseph, the defensive tackle for the Vikings. Maybe the best run-stuffing defensive tackle in the league, and he missed last week. He's been hurt. I haven't heard as of, you know, Thursday around 11 when we're recording this if he's playing or not, but that's a big deal in shutting down that interior running game for Seattle.
Right now on the injury report, he's listed as day-to-day. That's probably just as helpful as anything else that we've said here. All right, our last game to cover here is the Green Bay Packers at the Washington Redskins. Green Bay, Brian and Neil put together this for your listening pleasure.
Welcome to Next Fan Up, the show for the fans by the fans. Here we're doing the super fan battle between Green Bay Brian.
Hey, how's it going?
And Washington Neil.
Good evening, gentlemen.
So, gentlemen, Brian, where do you see this game going? You know, what's your offense versus the Washington defense breakdown here?
Oh, boy. I don't know where to begin with the Packers offense. I feel like I've railed against them week in and week out for about the last 2 months. So I think we've struggled really to move the ball. Our offense has really lacked a lot of rhythm. It seems like every yard we gain, every play we run is a struggle. So I expect that to continue. Obviously, we've seen quite the trend here for the last 10 weeks or so, not being able to move the ball as efficiently as I'm used to. I think it's going to be a fairly, I hope it's a low scoring game. I think that's kind of the only chance the Packers have to win, is if we can keep it below 20, maybe 24 points. Our offense, I'll start with the offensive line. They have been really banged up, which has really made life miserable for one Aaron Rodgers. Couple that with the lack of production from our wide receiver group. Nobody's really getting open. And when you kind of combine that with our struggling offensive line, he's got to kind of pull plays out of you know where. So it's been rough to watch, and I kind of expect it to continue. I imagine that Washington, even though, you know, maybe their defensive line isn't the strength of their defense, I definitely think that we're going to see Rodgers under some duress. So he's going to need to get the ball out, and we're going to need to hit those wide receivers or potentially get the running game going. I think that's probably, if we have any chance at all at making any kind of a run, we're going to need our defense to play well and for our running game to get on track, because we've seen week after week of just struggling, painful to watch offensive passing game out of Green Bay. So that's my take on the Packers offense against the Washington defense.
Our defense against the Packers offense, I think you'll manage to run the ball against us. I think Lacy and Starks, good chance of getting some good yardage if you run straight at us. We seem to be not too bad if teams just run left or right, but go up the middle and you'll get some yards on us. As as much as I can understand, you know, the Packers obviously have struggled, and I watched the game against Minnesota last week, struggling to move the ball at all. I think you have to remember the Redskins have played two playoff teams all year, and we got our pants pulled down or our bums smacked properly in both games. I think the combined 71-26 score was fair enough. So don't expect to see us putting up a huge defensive performance against you. We will get some pass rush going. We have young rookie Preston Smith, who leads all rookies in sacks. He'll get pressure up the from the right side of the line, our right side. It'll very much depend, I think, on how your offensive line's playing. But I think you mentioned injuries there. And I think, did I see Josh Sitton playing out of position against Minnesota?
Yeah, you did. We were without David Bakhtiari last week. He's dealing with an ankle injury. It's kind of been nagging him for most of the year. And we didn't have very many good options at kind of a backup left tackle. We could have put in Barclay, but he's not a left tackle. He's more of a guard than anything, but we've lined him up more often at right tackle. We could have moved Bulaga over to left tackle, but then you kind of shuffle everybody around on the offensive line. And I really think that by moving Sitton out to left tackle, yeah, it's not the position he's best at, but I think it does get our best five on the field as far as offensive linemen go.
One of my concerns, obviously, is can we stop anything you've got coming across the middle? I mean, do you have anybody coming out of the backfield or a tight end who's going to come into the middle of the field? Because we've troubled all season stopping those short
we
passes.
We have gotten very minimal production out of our tight end. Out of the backfield, both Lacy and Starks can catch the ball okay. I wouldn't say that's what either of them excel at, except, and this is kind of the one exception, it kind of holds true for our entire offense, is we've been very successful with screens. So I expect we'll see us run screens 2, 3, maybe 4 times a game with running backs out of the backfield, and I would love to see some stats on what percentage of our offensive yardage has come on screen plays, because I would guess it's way above the league average.
Okay.
Really struggle to move the ball also otherwise.
Yeah. As one of our keys on defense going to be to try and contain Rodgers, to try and keep him in the pocket? Because one of the things you always see with Rodgers is he moves left, moves right, dodges a tackle, chucks the ball down the field and gets a first down or runs for a first down. I think if we can contain Rodgers, it helps.
That's a great game plan, because that's kind of the only other way we've really been able to move the ball has been kind of on those screen passes, which I just talked about, and really plays that are out of structure. So the play breaks down and Rodgers makes things happen. And we haven't really moved the ball if we kind of just run the plays as they're written. But if he can get outside the pocket, then you can really kind of see more of what the Packers offense has looked like in years past.
One of the keys for me is probably no more of an intangible thing, where you guys have been in the playoffs. Well, you seem to be in the playoffs every single year, whereas the Redskins haven't been since 2012. I think the experience factor, both defensively and for both offenses, is going to be a big bonus for you guys, because we have just no experience in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I saw 18 of the last 23 years we've made the playoffs, which is quite the run. I feel pretty blessed in that sense. So hopefully, if there's anything in our favor, it might be the experience. You're right.
18 out of 23 years. That's just disgusting.
Yeah, that's not too bad, huh?
So, Neil, how do you see your guys' offense attacking the Green Bay defense?
Well, our offense has changed over the course of the season. If you asked me this question in weeks 1 through 5 or 6, I'd be saying to you, we have to run the ball. We have to run the ball. But in the last 4 or 5 weeks, it's become the Captain Kirk show, and he's just ripping up defenses. I mean, we're not ripping up great defenses, to be fair. We had one big pressure game against Philadelphia where Cousins really, really, really took over the game and just played fantastically well. The keys to us will be to get Jordan Reed and DeSean Jackson. It's been a standard thing the last month. If when Jackson came back, if we can get him down the field, will make plays, because Reed will Reed's pretty hard to cover, I think, across the middle. He's tough for, he's too fast for linebackers, and his route running is probably too good for most. And against safeties and cornerbacks, he's just a bit bigger and more physical. So if we finish the game where Jordan Reed's had 8 or 9 catches, then I think I would be surprised if we haven't won the game.
Yeah, I would say that's a fantastic plan of attack against the Packers. We've really struggled to cover linebackers. Sam Barrington, who was lining up at inside linebacker for us for the first couple games of the season, went down with an injury, and we really haven't found somebody that can replace him.
And yet you have the 6th-ranked pass defense, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, and we've been very fortunate to have some cornerbacks that our rookies step up. Demarius Randall has played very well. I'm really excited to watch him develop from over the course of this season. That I'll be kind of curious to watch over the next year or two also. He's really stepped up and filled in. The other thing I wanted to say about our secondary is it's going to be really interesting if Sam Shields can get out of the concussion protocol. He's been in concussion protocol for the last 3, maybe 4 weeks. I think he's probably our best bet to match up against DeSean Jackson. He's the fastest guy we've got on our team, and probably one of the few guys we have on our team that may be able to run with DeSean. So that's one of the other keys to the Packers' defense, shutting down the Washington offense.
I think it's probably worth keeping an eye on the rookie wide receiver Jamison Crowder for the Redskins. He's slowly been doing just better and better as the season's gone. Had a bit of a dip in the middle of the season, as a lot of rookies do. But, very good in the slot. He'll probably get a few catches too. I think our offensive line has been developing all season. We got Brandon Scherff back in the draft. Some people were a bit concerned about that pick. I have to say I was probably one of them. But he's actually turned out to be a real stabilizing Well, that's probably not being kind to him. He's been stabilizing, but he's also been starting to play better and better. And he's highly ranked in terms of overall grades for guards. So we're looking forward to him developing as the years go by. But I think he'll be important. You look at the Packers defense and you think, why is Clay Matthews playing inside linebacker? What a luxury.
Yeah, no kidding. We were able to kind of move him in there to cover up a really major deficiency in our roster. I think most people would still prefer to see him playing outside as a dedicated pass rusher. He's been pretty good in the middle, all things considered. Year 2 has been a little bit better, although he did go for a stretch before the Vikings game where he didn't even log a tackle the last couple of games. So he's been remarkably quiet. But he came on in that game a little bit. He had a sack of Bridgewater. And he does still rush the passer pretty well, even from the interior. He seems to be able to time up the quarterback cadence pretty well and anticipate the snap count and can kind of beat the guard-center combination blocks against him. That's really the only reason we have him playing inside is because that's kind of a position on our roster that's bereft of talent.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic, Clear.
So, guys, we've kind of broken this down. Any final thoughts and any score predictions on this?
Yeah, I can go first there. I think I'm worried about your experience and your ability to handle pressure with your vast playoff experience against ours. I think we might be able to mitigate that with our home field advantage. I think that we've done well at home this year. I think we've got momentum coming into the game. I think the team is probably as surprised as I am, probably more surprised than I am, being in the playoffs. It's all good. And I think I'm going to predict a Redskins win. I'm going to say 23-17 in a close game and probably quite an ugly game.
Yeah, I would say for the Packers' perspective, it'll be interesting. I think we're probably one of the worst 10-win teams I've ever seen. If you look at the last 10 weeks or so, I think we're 4-6. Which is really kind of limping into the playoffs. I'm happy, no offense to Neil, I'm happy we get to play against the Redskins instead of the Vikings in back-to-back weeks. But I don't know if that's going to be enough to save us. I'm going to predict that the Packers win, but just by a hair, 21-20.
Well, I could take the opportunity to say good luck, Brian. Obviously, I hope Washington win, but I hope it's altogether just a great game.
Yep, same to you, Neil. Thank you.
All right, so interestingly enough, M-Dub, all of the superfans picking their teams to win. I wouldn't expect it any other way. But how do you see this game playing out?
I mean, anyone that's followed me over the years knows that I am as big a Aaron Rodgers supporter, fan, believer as there is in the league, or is there that does this for a living. I mean, I think I've said before that I think he's going to go down as the best quarterback that's ever lived when it's all said and done. But clearly, this is going to be his worst season. It's not all on him, of course, but he hasn't played well. The supporting cast has been a nightmare. When you look at these two teams, I have no doubt in my mind that Washington's better right now than Green Bay. And the only pause I have for picking the Redskins, and I'm going to pick the Redskins, is look, Rodgers might light it up. You know, we might just see an epic performance from Rodgers where he makes six or seven throws that no other quarterback in the league would even try. You know, I mean, that's a possibility. There is talent here. But Green Bay is really a mess, to be honest, on offense. I think their defense is somewhat underrated. But I'm really impressed with what Gruden has done. They have a great set of weapons in Washington. Those guys are super hot. The defense is okay, but you know Green Bay's offense is really anemic right now.
You know, let me give you the a fan perspective on this game. Obviously, the thought process going into last week for that NFC North title, the winner was going to end up with the Seahawks, the loser was going to Washington. The only problem with that theory is that, well, just because you get through Washington doesn't necessarily mean you don't see the Seahawks down the road. But do you think perhaps the Packers let up a little bit because they preferred the matchup against Washington than Seattle?
No. I mean, I was joking going into that game that, boy, I mean, the winner here is really the loser. I mean, going to Washington's a lot better than hosting Seattle. But no, I mean, watching the game, I don't think there was any of that at all. And especially if I'm watching Green Bay all year, I mean, they're bad. I could easily make the argument that they're the worst team in the playoffs.
James, what do you think?
Well, I mean, going into what you said before about the hot teams coming in, you know, Kansas City, Houston, Seattle, Green Bay is the exact opposite of that. In their past 10 games, they're 4-6, and one of those came on a miracle Hail Mary at the end of the game. You know, they could easily be 3-7. They may even be worse than that. Both Aaron Rodgers and Kirk Cousins, they've thrown for right around 4,000 yards, 30 touchdowns, and 10 interceptions. I mean, there's not a huge difference statistically from those two. Rushing is the same. The best receiver on either of these teams is Jordan Reed, and he didn't even play a full season. He's the only one even close to 1,000 yards receiving. You know, I think Washington's going to win this one. Aaron Rodgers is going to do Aaron Rodgers things and keep it close, but it's not going to be enough.
Nick?
Yeah, I also think that Rodgers against this Redskins defense that, you know, like M-Dub said, it's not great, it's not awful. I get the feeling he's going to find something he likes throwing against it. And on the flip side, we've seen a very efficient, very safe, well, not even really safe, but just a Kirk Cousins like we haven't seen before in the last half of this season. But also, I mean, I just have the feeling like Washington's played up to the same competition as the Packers have. And when it really comes down to it, I'm kind of like arguing against my same logic when talking about Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. I just get the feeling like Rodgers is going to be able to see the plays that need to happen to win that game with the playoff experience that he and the other Packers have. And Cousins on the flip side against a really underrated Packers defense. He's going to try too hard. There's going to be moments where he's going to throw it and start throwing some of the crazy tosses that he's had earlier in this season into triple coverage and things like that. And there's going to be some Kirk Cousins mistakes that come back to bite him. I don't know if the Packers are going to do much beyond this game if they win. I mean, they were my Super Bowl pick, but it's not looking great for them, but I'm still taking them this week.
You know, I can give you two reasons why Aaron Rodgers stunk and Kirk Cousins didn't in the second half of the season. And that's because I had Aaron Rodgers and Kirk Cousins on the fantasy team, and I cut Kirk Cousins and went all in on Aaron Rodgers. And thus, Ramona Rice is the first ever Blog Talk Radio Fantasy League champion, which pains me to say. Some more useless stats, though, for you. Teams meet for the third time in the postseason, first time dating back to 1972. The clubs have split their first two playoff meetings. Their first was in 1936, M-Dub. It was the NFL championship.
Super Green important Bay. In this matchup.
Yes, Green Bay was 21. The Boston Redskins were 6 at the Polo Grounds in New York. why were the Boston Redskins and Green Bay Packers playing at the Polo Grounds in New York? I don't know. And in 1972, the Washington beat Green Bay 16-3 at Washington. But Green Bay does lead the all-time series between the two clubs, including the postseason, 19-14-1. They've won 5 of the past 6 meetings. But having owned Aaron Rodgers in fantasy and knowing that he is not very good right now, and Kirk Cousins, interestingly enough, this may not be a useless stat, has a 74.7 completion percentage. That is the highest in NFL history in home games in a single season. I'm going to take Washington here as well. And I will let you know, Number Fire has this game as a pick 'em. They love Washington at 61.8%. So that doesn't make me feel comfortable. But M-Dub, knowing that you like Washington in this game makes me feel a little bit more comfortable.
Why, thank you. I know a thing or two about a thing or two.
Yeah. I that's why I invited you to join us here during the playoffs. So that's fantastic. M-Dub, why don't you tell people where they can check out some of your work during this time?
Yeah, I've been doing playoff previews for fanrag.com. And tomorrow I will be on the Mr. Tucker's podcast. You know, maybe everybody remembers him from the three of us.
I heard
our time together.
Yeah.
And I'll be joining him from every Tuesday. And just hit me up on Twitter, at WilliamsonNFL. I'm always got something going.
You answer a lot of fan tweets, too. You're big into fantasy football. You are a big dynasty fantasy player as well. So following you on Twitter is a great place to go to get lots of fantasy advice.
Absolutely, man. Hey, this is fun.
Awesome. Thanks, M-Dub. Thanks to you, James and Nick, for joining us on this wild card preview. Remember, you can check out all of the Superfan write-ups for the wild card games on our Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/NFU podcast, or, of course, if you're on Facebook, you just type in Next Fan Up in the search bar. Our page comes right up, and this podcast will be pinned right to the top of the page once it's available. Of course, you can get our podcast on iTunes. We're also in TuneIn and Stitcher, but subscribe on iTunes. Leave us a review. That would be fantastic. And of course, you can get it on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. And we are on Twitter at NFU Podcast. I am at The Real Pod Vader on Twitter. James and Nick are on Twitter as well. James, why don't you tell everybody your Twitter handle?
@Boiler_James.
And Nick?
I'm at Clayton Nicholas.
Perfect. So there you go. It's wild card weekend. You know, I like to end it. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is 4 quarters long.